and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the presentation of Telenor's results for the second quarter of 2010. My name is Pål Kvalheim, and I have the pleasure of guiding you through this morning's presentation. We hope everyone has the material we made available, that is the press release, the quarterly report, and the presentation to be used in a minute. This can be found, also found on our website, telenor.com. You may watch this presentation live or in recording on either the internet or on a mobile phone. You may also send in written questions during the transmission. Please find information on these alternatives on our website. As usual, there will be a Q&A session directly after the presentation. First, hear from the audience present, then from the ones participating on the phone, and finally, the possibility to conduct individual interviews. To present the figures today, we have our CEO, Mr. Jon Fredrik Baksaas, and our CFO, Mr. Richard Aa. Without further ado, I leave the floor to Mr. Baksaas. Fredrik?
Yeah, thank you, Pål, and also good morning to you from me, and welcome to Fornebu this morning. We are pleased to note that the positive trends seen in the first quarter of 2010 continues into this quarter. There are two main reasons for this. The economic recovery in Asia also fuels the mobile market, and our OpCos takes its fair share in this. The second, the high demand and great numbers of smartphones creates increased data usage, particularly in the Nordics, but also in Thailand and Malaysia, we can see this trend building up. It is actually only Central Europe that struggles growth-wise in this quarter, because also broadcast delivers 6% organic growth, driven primarily by Canal Digital in Norway, both on the satellite platform as well as for cable TV. During the quarter, we expanded our footprint in India to 13 circles. Uninor now enters a new phase with a single-minded focus at developing our market position and improve the revenue build-up. In this quarter, our consolidated customer base grew by 5.4 million subscribers, basically all in Asia, where Grameenphone was particularly strong with 2.6 million new subscribers in this quarter alone. On the financials, the Telenor board yesterday decided to launch a share buyback program based upon the strength of the balance sheet and the strong cash flow of the group. Richard Aa will deep into the details of this later in the presentation. In our Nordic operations, mobile revenue growth is more than offsetting the fixed line revenue decline in this quarter. The mobile revenue growth is driven by smartphones and data usage. In fact, we believe that around 30% of our Nordic mobile subscribers now are active data users. 5% of the mobile revenue growth in Norway, of which mobile data contributes around 4 percentage points, seems to be pretty stable from Q1 this quarter. The lower handset sales in Q2 versus Q1 explains the lower year-on-year growth between the two quarters. This may be because people are sitting and waiting a bit for the next iPhone generation to arrive, which is anticipated to happen towards the end of this month. The mobile network upgrades are on track, and we will be at full speed towards the end of this year. In addition, our efforts on the network side, the work on the cost reductions and cost efficiency will continue, and we will be given the same high attention as before. The operating cash flow target for Nordics of 10 billion Norwegian kroner stands firm. Moving then to Central Europe. Here we note that consumer demand is still weak, and trends are fairly similar to what they were in the first quarter. We are maintaining the margin in Hungary despite the fairly significant revenue decline. We do see positive OPEX effects from the initiatives implemented in Q1, despite the fact that we at the same time did the rebranding to Telenor. We will note a reduction in total OPEX for the year as such. In Serbia, the economic climate seems to be somewhat better, a bit more stable than in Hungary, but the Norwegian krone numbers are heavily impacted by the weakened dinar. We have also downsized the organizations in Serbia by roughly 10% from May, which will give full OPEX effects from third quarter onwards. The OPEX side then, both for Serbia and Hungary, will be lower in 2010 than what it was for 2010. Sorry, for 2009, of course. In Asia, this is really the region to be in this quarter. All established Asian operations are performing well, showing healthy revenue growth. It's only, in fact, DTAC that has below double-digit growth, and they are in this quarter close to, because they are at 9%. I already mentioned Grameenphone, which had a remarkable net add figure of 2.6 million in the second quarter alone. And yesterday, Grameenphone reached 27 million subscribers all in all. This brings around some margin dilution because of the growth cost associated with this strong growth on the handsets, on the penetration side. And also the Grameenphone labeled cheap handsets proved to become very popular, and we've sold close to 300,000 in this quarter, and really we're out of stock. And this is a low-priced handset specifically targeted to new users. The general initiated cost measures that we started in all the operations for this year is now also starting to show results, in particular in Digi and DTAC. Initially, I mentioned the smartphone effect, and the increased usage of smartphones is an additional driver for growth both in Thailand and Malaysia. We now see this as a promising potential in these markets in the same way, hopefully, as we can register and note what is going on in the Nordic countries for the time being. And let me then close with on Asian operations with Pakistan, which once again has a record high EBITDA margin, passing 30% for the first time, noting 33% EBITDA margin in this quarter. We see this as a result of the high penetration and the maturity of the market and a good economic development in the country for the time being. However, there are also things to be aware of, and that relates, as one example, to the energy situation, where higher prices on fuel and electricity in general may also create total pressure on consumer wallets, as we've seen in earlier stages. But all in all, I have to congratulate the CEOs of the OpCos in Asia fabulous quarter, and in particular in Pakistan, when we now have crossed over into the 30% EBITDA margin. We've had a very good performance in that market through the years of being in operation. If we then move to India, generally the economic development in India stands strong this year. Also booming SIM card penetration. The double SIM practice though is however also very much prevailing. After the second launch in June, Uninor is now offering services in 13 out of 22 circles, reaching out to a population of around 900 million. Uninor is now entering an operational phase where focus must be on market execution and revenue build-up, single-mindedly. To this, the skill set that Sigve Brekket brings with him from his experience with the other Asian operations will be of great value when he now has taken over as the managing director in Uninor. We're still in the early stages of Uninor, knowing that patience and consistent market efforts are what it takes over time. Sigve will enhance and drive corrective measures to which we can see some early positive effects. Here we will speed up cross-circle learning as variations do exist between the circles. We will engage deeper with distribution by presence and training, and commission structures and market execution will be directed and strengthened. Uninor's new innovative dynamic pricing concept has been well received as we now see promising development in usage with the aim of establishing a primary SIM position with our customers. Accordingly, we are adjusting costs and CapEx to revenue build-up in line with what we said in the first quarter. And consequentially, our outlook for India and Uninor in 2010 is maintained, as is also the peak funding for the project. Closing in, I will give some remarks about the operational focus going forward. The promising usage development that we see around mobile data is really something that this industry is about for the time being. Growth in data usage, pricing model, business models creates new growth. And I think that we're not the only mobile company describing that effect in these days. It's to stimulate usage through the new smartphones and to have segmented price plans that count in this area. We will continue to develop our market position in India with focus on quality subscribers and pick up in usage and build revenues in the way and with the measures that Sigve now will strongly focus us in Uninor. Our work on cost consciousness and cost efficiency will continue. Efficiency initiatives launched in all operations at this stage, and we will closely follow them up throughout this year. And lastly, the upgrades in the Nordics in particular, but also modernizations in other operations, is to the core of our activities in the second half, with the aim of ensuring predictable cost structures and further enhance quality in our operations for our customers. And with those, with this presentation, I hand over to Richard, who will take us through the financials of the group in this second quarter 2010.
Thank you, Fredrik. Also, good morning from me to you, here from Fornebu. I'll then take you through the financials The first slide summarizes really the highlights of this quarter, and it's also a table of contents for this presentation. So if we start with the revenue, Fredrik has already gone through the drivers of the 5% organic revenue growth, but I would like to just state that this is the highest organic revenue growth in Telenor since second quarter 2008. So it's been the highest growth in since 2 years. We have a 28% EBITDA margin in the quarter. That is in line with our guiding. We should say that, and I'll come back to that, that some opcos are improving their EBITDA margin, but some other opcos have a slight decline in the EBITDA margin, largely due to some growth costs, in particular in Bangladesh. The cash flow margin is at 16%. That is actually somewhat better than our guiding due to very low capex also in this quarter. There, I come back to this, but I would say that we will have to spend more capex in the second half, but lower for the year than we expected earlier. The equity increased by 10 billion this quarter, despite that we paid out almost 5 billion in dividends. We have stronger results, but we also have some special accounting effects related to our QVSTAR assets that were contributed into VimpelCom Limited in the quarter. Despite also paying out dividends, our net debt to EBITDA remained below 1. And as you recall, we have set a max target, max cap for the net debt to EBITDA at 1.6. We're still well below that and have a healthy balance sheet. And that's why we're also now initiating the share buyback program. And we have improved the outlook for 2010, both on the revenue growth side and the capex side. I'll come back to that. So, starting with the revenue growth and the EBITDA, we see now that we also on the revenue side have had 25 billion Norwegian kroner in the quarter. If we look at the EBITDA, we see that the EBITDA is now slightly more than 7 billion. And if we compare that to the second quarter last year, which was close to 7.9 billion, it's a drop of some 771 million. The main reason for this drop is, of course, India, where we have expensed approximately 1 billion kroner more here than here. Also, currency effects takes down the results with approximately 150 million. So India and currency is 1,150 million down. But since the drop is less, it's due to strong performance, in particular in DTAC, Pakistan, Digi, and Sweden. It's a much better performance in 2010 than in 2009. But on the other hand, we have growth costs in Bangladesh and in Norway that takes down the operating profit in those opcos. If you look at on a quarter-by-quarter basis, you also see a slight drop in the margin from 30% to 28%, and that can also be explained by the same opcos. It's really Grameenphone and Norway, where you have high customer intake costs in Grameenphone, where we subsidize this SIM tax from the government. That takes the margin down significantly in Grameenphone when you have such a high customer intake as we have this quarter. And in Norway, we also have strong sales of handsets, advanced handsets that we pay a commission on, that takes down the margin. In addition, we have some extra OPEX in connection with the network drop this quarter. We also have spent more money in Norway this quarter on network maintenance, while network maintenance was particularly low in the first quarter 2010. But we are in line with our guiding at 28%, and I think the previous experience from Bangladesh is when we have these high growth costs, we will certainly recover them in the period going forward with the higher customer intake. I'll not go into detail on this slide, but we have had quite big effects on our accounts from currencies in the past. We still have that in this quarter, but to a lesser extent. If we compare then organic growth compared to reported growth, we see that we have 4.7 organic growth and 2.7 reported growth. The main reason for the difference we find in the European economy, where the decline in the euro and the issues related to governmental debt, not only in the EU, but also in countries like Hungary and Serbia, have really taken the currency down. And we can see that that decline here. Like the forint is down 16% year on year, and the Serbian dinar is down 20% year on year. On the other hand, compensating someone for that, we see that the baht in Thailand and also the ringgit in Malaysia is strengthening now towards the Norwegian kroner. So the difference between organic revenue growth and reported is not as big as before. And this same trend goes for the EBITDA. And here you can see what I mentioned, the opcos that are contributing strongly to an improved EBITDA, Thailand in particular, Sweden, Malaysia, and quite an astonishing improvement in Pakistan in this quarter. Well, then again, we have this growth cost in Norway and Bangladesh. I'd also like to note, like predicted, broadcast. We don't speak that much about broadcast in this context, but a very strong quarter in broadcast. And also, first quarter also was strong in broadcast. Moving on to the capex to sales, I mentioned that that we also had low capex in this quarter. First quarter was particularly low with 10%. This quarter we came at 12% capex to sales. Excluding India, we are at 10% capex to sales. We will not be able to maintain that for the rest of the year. But the guiding for the year is now taken down to 12 to 13% capex to sales. Here on the right-hand side, you can see a breakdown of where we now spend the capex based on the various areas in Telenor. And as you see, India, even though we have high attention on the India project, is still a rather small part of the total capex in Telenor. Not to say that we spend little money in India, but you have to put it into perspective. Still, the biggest part on the capex side is the Nordics. I would say half of this is on fixed and half of it is on mobile. So actually on the mobile part in itself, the most capex now goes into the Asian, of course. And you can see the effect of the slowdown in Eastern Europe. We hardly spend any capex in Serbia, Hungary, and Montenegro. Then that takes us to the cash flow. We have 16% operating cash flow this quarter, or slightly above 4 billion. And if you compare that to the second quarter last year, it's down from 4.9. And that is exactly the same effect as we have on the EBITDA. It's around 1 billion on India, and then the other, of course, that have improved EBITDA and worsened EBITDA is driving the same change here. That is down from the first quarter. That is 2% on the EBITDA, lower margin that we have already covered, and it's 2% higher capex to sales in this quarter. If we exclude India, we are now at 22% operating cash flow in this quarter, which is quite strong. If we take the four quarter rolling operating cash flow, including India, we are at then 14 billion now operating cash flow. If we break that down per region, we see that the Nordic region still on a fourth quarter rolling basis is ahead of the 10 billion target. It's 10.5 billion. Here we will have increased capex in the coming quarter due to the network swaps. We already started to have capex on that in the first half, but it will increase going forward. So high focus on cost and cost implementation, new cost implementation measures in the Nordics to preserve the 10 billion is very important. On the CE, we see that despite the challenging macroeconomic climate, by manning reductions, we have reduced manning with 10 and 15% in Serbia and Hungary. And low capex, we are maintaining the 3 billion cash flow out of this operation. However, the recent drop in the currency put it slightly below the 3 billion. Then in Asia, we see the gray bars here show the very strong performance of the established operations in Asia. The cash flow out of this, and but please note that this is on 100% basis, and we don't own 100% of Digi and DTAC and Grameenphone. But on a 100% basis, they start to pace the Nordics now in cash flow generation. Then we, of course, we have the India expenses, which are developing as planned, which takes it down by approximately 7.3 billion. Moving on to the income statement and the balance sheet this quarter, we have already explained the development in revenues and EBITDA. We have some other items this quarter. We have a lost contract that we have provided 81 million for, and then we have workforce reductions in Serbia and Nordics with 38 million and some other items. If you move down, to depreciation, we see depreciation is up from the second quarter. That is due to that we accelerate the write-off of the networks in the Nordics due to that we're swapping them out. Then the EBIT is an improvement from approximately 2 billion last year to 2.754 billion this year. And the reason is, of course, the drop in the EBITDA, largely due to India. But then we impaired Serbia with 2 billion last year. And then the depreciations explain the rest. So we have this improvement of about 800 million on the EBITDA due to the Serbia effect. Then a big item, a special item on the results this quarter is 7.6 billion contribution from associated companies. As you, most of you know, we lag one quarter in reporting the results of VimpelCom Limited. So this is 1 billion we have taken in as the first quarter results of VimpelCom Limited. But the big item is that we have a gain on the Qstar shares of about 7.5 billion. And the way this gain arises is that when we contributed the Qstar shares into VimpelCom Limited, they were due to IFRS, they would have to be written up to the market value, and market value was then measured by the VimpelCom Limited share price multiplied with the exchange ratio between our Qstar shares and the VimpelCom shares that was agreed in the merger. So that is how this gain arises. Our VimpelCom shares, on the other hand, is not written up to market value. We spent a lot of time on this with auditors, but this is the right way of doing it. We still have a book value of our VimpelCom Limited shares, which are significantly below the market value of VimpelCom. But when you have a transaction, you have to write it up to market value. Moving on, net financials this quarter was quite normal. We have lower debt and lower interest costs, so net financials now at 231 million negative. Then on the tax side, we also have a special effect from VimpelCom, that we have the gain tax of about 350 million coming out of this transaction. But then, due to the way we have structured our shareholding on VimpelCom, we can reverse an earlier accrual of withholding tax. We don't think we will or for sure, we don't pay withholding tax on dividends from VimpelCom Limited going forward. So we have 1 billion reserved for this that we can now take into income. So the income this quarter was very high due to the special effects on VimpelCom, 5.73. If you correct back for VimpelCom and some other special effects, I would say that the EPS, underlying EPS this quarter was around 2 NOK per share. Then on the balance sheet, we also have this effect of QVSTAR that really changed our balance sheet. I mentioned that our equity has increased by 10 billion, more than that. And that really comes mainly from the write-up on non-current assets, which is this step-up value of QVSTAR. And here it's a little detailed, but the step-up value is actually 10.2 billion. If you recall from the earlier slide, the gain was 6.5. That is because we earlier have taken the reduction in the Ukrainian hryvnia directly to equity. That is 3.7 billion. That is now taken over the result, and you can take it back here in the non-current assets and also to the equity. So the effect on the equity and the balance sheet side of QVSTAR is actually 10.2 billion. Then we have the 1 billion in net profits also from associates, mainly from VimpelCom. And we have invested in scheme of 1 billion, taking the associates up by approximately 15 billion. And then this translates into an improved equity of 10 billion, which is net income of close to 10 billion, paid out dividends of about 4.1 billion. And then we have translation effects due to currency, but this is mainly this reversal of the write-down due to the Ukrainian hryvnia that we already had taken to the equity previously. Those are the main effects on the balance sheet. Then moving on to the debt side, we have an increase in net debt this quarter from 21.3 to 25.5, an increase of 4.2. We have paid dividends of about 4.8. That is the main explanation why the debt is increasing. But I can take you quickly through the reconciliation between the net debt end of March and net debt end of June. And we had approximately 7 billion in EBITDA, and we paid interest of 300 million. We paid taxes of about 2.6 billion. 2 billion of that is in Norway, and about 600 million is in the Asian OpCos. We had CapEx paid of about 3 billion. We received dividends of about 200 million, and then we paid out dividends of 4.8 billion. The 4.8 is approximately 4.1 out of Telenor ASA, and then the rest is to minorities in our Asian OpCos. Small currency changes on our cash position, and then some changes in accrual and other effects. So that takes us down to the net change of 4.2. I also note that still, even the debt increased slightly this quarter. As I said earlier, the ratio net debt EBITDA is still below 1.9, and that is significantly below the cap we have set on net debt EBITDA of 1.6, which gives us room to go into share buyback program. We have decided to initiate a share buyback program of approximately 3% of the shares in Telenor. Our aim is to complete this buyback during this calendar year. And the main thinking behind the share buyback program of Telenor now in 2010, and also our thinking going forward, is that we will have an ambition to deliver a competitive yield to the shareholders as a combination of dividends and buyback. And if we then complete this program this year at the current share price of approximately 88, it represents a payback to the shareholders of about 4.4 billion. And as you recall, we have already paid dividend of 4.1 billion. So that takes the total shareholder remuneration in 2010 up to 8.5 billion. And at today's share price, that gives a yield of approximately 6%. Then moving on to the debt side. Going forward, it's our ambition to ensure that we have a healthy balance between our growth profile. We should not forget the growth profile. We see the effects of the growth profile now in the Asian OpCos, how much that can contribute if we also invest in growth. But we need to have a healthy balance between maintaining that growth profile and deliver a competitive yield to the shareholders. That also takes me then to the outlook. And let me start with India. We had the previous outlook of India, which we are now maintaining. We are quite confident that we will be able to deliver on the same target in India, even if the market environment is quite challenging for 2010. So that is some background for then the guiding for the total Telenor group. And I just want to give one, when the analysts do their numbers now, you have to remember that in this quarter, EDB is still consolidated. If the deal goes through, EDB will be deconsolidated from third quarter as a discontinued operation. That will have some effect on these numbers, as EDB has some slight different parameters on EBITDA margin and CapEx to sales than Telenor. So these numbers are still including EDB as a consolidated entity. We are then increasing our outlook for the organic revenue from low single digit to 3-5% growth based on the strong performance, especially in Asia, and the revenues coming in from mobile data. EBITDA margin we're maintaining at 28%, and the CapEx to sales we're taking down one notch to 12-13% compared to 13-14%. That is really explained that we have lower investments so far this year, but that we still need to increase CapEx in the second half. So I think that will end this presentation. Just to sum up, that also like the first quarter, the second quarter was a strong financial quarter for Telenor. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. We are now ready to take your questions, so I invite Mr. Baksaas back on the podium. Before you ask your questions, please be so kind as to wait for a microphone and please introduce yourself. Yes, there's a question over there.
Hi, I'll use that as one. I have two questions, if I may. One is on India and the effect of the dynamic price plan. You say that as many as 60% of subscribers have taken the dynamic price plan. I suppose that it's towards the end of the second quarter, and I wonder if you can sort of give some color on what effect you think that will have going forward on sort of the ARPU numbers, and if you think you will be able to occupy the primary SIM spot, which is essential to drive ARPU and economic growth in India. And the other question is in Norway, we see a good growth in mobile data in the Nordics and Norway also. But in Norway, you have the reverse effect of decline in fixed operations. And I noticed this quarter that they about cancel out. So the revenue in Q2 this year is about the same as Q2 last year. And can you give some expectations on how you expect that dynamic to develop in the coming years? Between growth in mobile and decline in fixed. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll start on your two questions. The dynamic pricing principles is something that we are able to deliver in India because we are probably the operator in India having the most modern equipment in our network, being able to offer dynamic pricing principles. Let me explain it. What does it mean? It means that we are able to throughout the 24/7 in a week, we can in a way pinpoint periods throughout the day where we can offer special rates. And we can do this by inviting the customers to sort of be aware of a discounted rate that will be available for these customers from the point of time he receives the SMS on his handset, and 1 hour from that point of time. And with that mechanism, we do believe that we can achieve to maintain the primary SIM position with the customers, with the aim of then also be able to receiving calls, but also offering price efficient rates to the customer when he wants to make his call. And the idea here is, of course, that this over time has the ambition of making creating a higher degree of loyalty between us and the customers. And we can do this at the point of time where we have the capacity in our network available, which obviously a newcomer has more of than the existing market players. We see that in those circles that have sort of started to promote this more visibly and aggressively, we see that it has an effect on the ARPA figures with the customers in that circle. As to the balance between the revenue generation in fixed and mobile in Norway, the mobile revenues crossed through the fixed line revenues for the first time in fourth quarter 2009. So there is a bigger chunk of mobile revenues from 1st of January onwards in Norway compared to fixed line. Does that mean that the growth will surpass the decline? I strongly believe so, because really data consumption is going mobile, and the new iPads and the iPad Lite that will emerge in the marketplace this autumn and into next year will further move in that direction. So then again, it's up against the price structures that the operators do put on these services that will decide whether the growth in mobile will outplay the decline in fixed line in the periods to come. And we will, of course, do our utmost to keep that balance tilting the right way.
Martin Hoff from Arctic Securities. Could you say something about expected dividend for 2010? Because even with your share buybacks now and with your guidance for 2010, you'll still be sharply reducing your net debt during the year. So what kind of expectations should we have for that dividend? And then secondly, could you say a little bit about your long-term targets for the Indian market, which we heard last time, I think, in January this year? You still expect EBITDA break-even 3 years after launch and 30% long-term EBITDA margin in that market? And then third question, how much of the 5% organic growth for Q2 is driven by the iPhone handset sales? Thanks.
Let me then go to the last one first, actually, because that was the most specific one. Out of the 5% growth, 4 percentage points, 4 of the 5, for some people, is related to mobile data growth. But we cannot sort of identify it to the iPhone as such, but to the general current category of smartphones as such. iPhone is one, and there are others out there as well, bringing the overall anticipation that around 30% of the whole handsets in the Nordic area for the time being are capable of data usage. For India, we do not say any specifically new on the long-term targets on the Indian project in this quarter. So the framework that you mentioned is at the table, as it stands. And then dividends, Rita?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really up to management to state the dividend for 2010 right now, but the aim now is to have a combination of dividend and share buybacks that should give a good balance between shareholder remuneration and healthy growth profile of Telenor. And that was at least our ambition to continue to advocate for that going forward. So I think you should view this share buyback program we're launching now as an initiative from the company, also with the support, of course, from the management to over time deliver a competitive return in combination with maintaining the growth profile.
I have a question relating to Norway. You specified growth-related costs, or specifically you said higher, somewhat higher OPEX in Norway. Could you please specify what those that higher OPEX is and how you see that trend for the rest of the year? And also on higher OPEX related to growth, moving to Bangladesh, we know from the past that the SIM card tax and your subsidies of the SIM card tax is obviously something that boosts growth, subscriber growth, but ideally something you would not like to do. How do you see that progressing and also relative to the competition that's evolving in the market?
Now let me start with the second one first, and Rikard can go a bit deeper into the questions about Norway. We've come to learn that when growth actually is there, over our experience in how we've driven and riding the S-curve, we need to be present and we need to participate in that, in those growth steps that the market, the growth in penetrations offers. You could say that if Grameenphone did not fuel the market by subsidizing the SIM tax, then others would have taken that growth. You might say that the growth wouldn't have been as strong as it has been for this quarter. But on the other hand, we've come to learn that when growth is there and the market is willing to engage in new user groups, then we really need to participate and make sure that we are able to follow reasonably well in building the market share. And in this phase, the SIM card plays a role, knowing also, of course, the scale of the double SIM feature is that, that is also part of the pyramid. But as you also said, ideally, you would, of course, try to avoid this. And Grameenphone, throughout later this year, we will seek to reduce the usage of this SIM card tax. And knowing that Grameenphone in this quarter has been the only company that hasn't subsidized the SIM card, the SIM tax in full. So we have an ambition, of course, to reduce that element. But when there are new segments willing to embrace the mobile phone as their new tool, then we need to be present there. And it's remarkable to see how these new user groups are also putting up a pretty good affordable usage rate the way we see it for the time being. Though, of course, there is a certain dilution to the ARPU.
Yes, when it comes to Norway, it's really three effects that take up the OPEX this quarter compared to the second quarter 2009. The biggest effect is the commission on handsets that we pay. That explains more than half of it. Then we are changing the entire network in Norway to 4G network, or really it's a combination of 2G, 3G and 4G. And that project has started. And we have some planned personnel and contractor costs that come into this quarter that we didn't have in the second quarter last year. And thirdly, we have increased costs on network maintenance in this quarter. That is something we watch very closely because that has increased also from the first quarter. We think that is well under control and that we will be able to reduce it again, but network maintenance is largely outsourced, and that we really need to have a high focus on.
Yes, there's a question over there. Julia Hindred of First Security. A question on India. You are maintaining your CapEx guidance despite the fact that you have a quite moderate CapEx in India in a quarter where you roll out the 5 new circles. Could you put some color on how you will allocate the remaining about not 1 billion for the rest of 2010?
Yes, I think that's a very, very good question. Fredrik alluded a little bit to it, that we have quite different performance in the various circles. We have some circles that have a clear indication that they're not able to establish their primary SIM position. And as those circles continue to grow, we would of course like to build more capacity in those circles. We have also launched 5 new circles at the end of the second quarter. And we have the same mechanism there, that if the revenue build-up is satisfactory, they will also be allocated more capex to build their capacity. Remember that we have, in the circles we have launched, we have approximately around 30% coverage as of today, so it's a significant way ahead of us to establish a higher coverage. But this will be it will be a gas and a brake depending on how the circles perform. So it's like a stick and a carrot also for the management.
Thank you. There's a question in the back.
Hello, this is Ole Petjega from SEB Enskilda. Question again regarding India. You said that you maintain your target regarding seed funding for this operation, even though the revenue levels obviously disappoints everyone. You have also, we know also now that from now on the funding of the Indian operation will primarily be done by increasing the debt level of Uninor, while you have, injected your equity. You have also previously said that you do not plan to give any guarantees from the holding companies for to those financial institutions giving debt to Uninor. Can you now guarantee that there will be not given any holding company guarantees to those banks willing to fund the Indian operation? Thank you.
The ultimate and final financing of Uninor is about to be worked at. I have to revise your observations to a certain extent, to finance this without any type of support from the holding companies, he has not seen sort of the ultimate message from these tables up to now. There will have to be some type of support in one way or another. Whether they will be full financial guarantees in the way you express yourself, that's another thing. But some type of support from the owning companies will be part of that package.
I would also like to add that the 155 billion rupee that we have said as peak funding, that is the EBITDA loss plus the capex on a 100% basis for the company. The equity injected from Telenor thus far is approximately around 7 billion kroner so far. So there's quite a big gap between what we have injected as equity and the total peak funding of the project. And this is where the project financing come into discussion, and then how much support you need to give on the bridge there.
There's a question
in the top. Hi, Justin Torgerson, Carnegie once again. Just to follow up on India. Do I understand it correctly that If circles are performing, you will obviously hit the accelerator and you will put more funding into those circles. If they're not, you're more inclined not to, to give the funding until the KPIs show that they're on the right track. If that is correct, is it fair to say that based on the first half of this year, where obviously more circles than not are, aren't performing, that your guidance obviously is including a considerable revision or a considerable improvement from the underperforming circles in the region?
If you then clarify, what do you mean by improvement?
Well,
what's the metrics behind the word improvement?
Well, I guess that's more a question to you, because you said that regions performing will get funding and regions that are not performing will probably apply more the brakes than the accelerator. And I don't know what you define as performing relative to not performing. You know, we just have a KPI, you know, so.
What we're talking about here is to sort of fuel more coverage into regions after they have been launched. So those circles that are performing according to metrics will have easier access to those additional funds needed to extend their coverage in their circle, compared to others that will have to prove to pass that threshold before we go move on further.
If there are no further questions from the audience, I then call upon the call conference host to introduce questions from the participants on the phone.
Next, Lawrence Sugarman, ING. Go ahead. Good morning, everybody. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, there's been a lot of discussion around how perhaps from the end of April, the economic situation globally has potentially turned down. And obviously, you have a very good insight from your diverse portfolio as to that potential impact. Would you be able to shed some light on whether there has been a consistent pattern of operational performance through the quarter, or indeed if there is evidence at all of any slowdown on that economic impact? The second point is with respect to the CapEx outlook. You've cut the CapEx outlook for this particular year. Could you possibly give some indication as to whether that goes, whether your thoughts on CapEx for the outer years are now more optimistic, and if so, is that driven by more efficiency or more price, or in fact perhaps a different view on where the growth outlook might go?
Your first question is of course a very wide question and has a lot of perspectives in it. And I wouldn't claim that though we're being executing our business in various areas of the world, we don't claim to be sort of macroeconomic experts. But it is from our perspective, we do see that the Nordic countries are performing well. Sweden has picked up, and someone would say, remarkably well after sort of the initial collapse in export industry. So the Nordics have been not necessarily unaffected, but the adjustments made have obviously moved the economic development into the right direction. We had hoped that Central Europe would have recovered a bit more speed than what we see. At the autumn 2009, we believed this would start in 2010. Now analysts are pointing to 2011. And I think we, with our figures today, can in a way confirm that that's more the picture. whereas in Asia there is a stronger growth. And also in Thailand, despite the turmoil on the political side in Thailand, the economic growth and the economic activity in the country seems to have been moved on very strongly, as can be seen from the figures. And most interestingly, also seeing Malaysia and Thailand being triggered by the data effect, so to speak, that the same benefits that can be seen and has been thought of as being a driver for data growth in Scandinavia and Europe is coming in Asian markets as well. So I can't sort of move it further or deeper than that. As to the capex side, yes, there are good efficiencies on the pricing side from vendors in this. Our entry to India has given us a benefit on our negotiating ability versus vendors. So the data growth coming into the network is also the driver for that to happen. And CapEx in general will follow volume development in both voice and data. Is this cut an expression for the next period to come? I wouldn't say so. I think the next period will have to speak for themselves, depending on what kind of economic climate we will be working in, as well as how successful the industry can be in deploying the business models around the data in the various markets, because I do believe these will be differently structured because of regulations and the general practices from market to market.
Thank you. Next, Tim Boddy, Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks. I wonder if it's possible to talk a bit about the kind of 2011 outlook in India. I appreciate it's early. I'm just a little confused as to how you plan to sort of substantially improve the revenue profile whilst not increasing. I think you said this was the peak funding year for India in terms of EBITDA losses plus CapEx. So if you just help us better understand how you see that revenue acceleration without needing to further invest, that would be most helpful. And then to add to that, any colour you can give on your strategic options in India. Obviously, there's regulatory uncertainty, but any colour you can give on that would be most helpful. Thank you.
I think you're in a way asking some questions that we have to prove rather than we have to explain at this point in time. With Sigve Brekke at the helm of Uninor operation in India from now onwards, he has experienced and he has seen the build-up on how we've done it in the prepaid markets in Asia for more than 10 years. The economic development in India is strong. The user groups are extending. We are of the belief that the telecom industry will take a bigger share of, in relative terms, of the GDP, because India is low as we stand in 2009-2010. And if this percentage can cross to 2%, as an example, then there will be growth in the telecom spend in the Indian market. And in general, the spend has been under pressure in the autumn 2009 because of the change to per second billing. But in this year again, starting to build slowly. And with greater user groups coming in, benefiting from mobile communication, we reckon that we will see some of the same effects in this country as we've seen in other countries. And the name of the game for us then is to work in a closer relationship with our distribution and sales and points of sale, and to get them to understand that the Uninor offering has something that stands out compared to other operators in the same area. And we have to prove that business model And we are having that belief out of the experience from other markets. And really, to dive deeper into that at this point in time is a bit, I think we have to take another occasion.
Next question, please.
Next, Maurice Patrick, Barclays Capital. Go ahead, please.
From Barclays Capital. In terms of India, you've talked about aligning the costs with revenues. You've talked about some of the cost reduction plans, although the CapEx is remaining unchanged for the year at the India level. Can you talk about a bit more about which areas you are taking out costs? Is it just pushing back a bit on distribution in terms of the number of SIMs actively pushed, or are there sustainable cost reductions that are getting put through? And just secondly, in terms of the dynamic pricing model you put there, I know your market share is low compared to peers. Presumably your network rollout is somewhat thinner as well. And your, in terms of your spare capacity, where currently does that sit? Does it vary dramatically by circle? Just so we can get a feel of how big the network actually is.
These are not, in a way, talk about taking out costs. It's about not spending costs. Let's keep that sort of pretty clear. We are greenfield. We have built an organization of around 2,500 people, and the rest of the business model is based upon outsourcing model with 100% power rent, a flexible agreement on IT resources, etc. So it's about not spending costs, not about taking costs out. And in that sense, we are able to control the spending according to the level of revenue build-up. And of course, this has to then to go hand in hand. As to your observation on the low market share, of course we are fairly low to peers in that respect because we're coming from the greenfield operation. When we cleaned out a bit on the customer stock in May, the month of May, we saw sort of a reduction on the market share, but when we looked at from after June again, the market share per SIM had grown. So I think these kinds of effects in these early stages of a greenfield will also come back in quarters to come. We've been in the Indian market since the end of fourth quarter. We've been there less than half a year. And in that very short period of time, we have been able to establish a phenomenal network reaching out in 13 states, reaching for the potential of 900 million people, seeing the market growing rapidly by SIM. And the name of the game then is to get customers on board, create loyalty, and have them stay with our service offerings. And here is where dynamic pricing comes in as our tool in order to create the attraction between our customers and our service offering. I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not saying it's a walk in the park, but with Sigve's experience in from the other markets and with the success of our distribution model in other areas and other countries of similar type in Asia, we believe this is doable also in India.
Great, thanks.
Next, Peter Nielsen, Chevrolet. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Three questions, please. Firstly, related to the network upgrade in Norway. Fred, you said in your initial comments that it was going according to plan and to be in place by end of year. I assume the rollout plan is still that the network will be in place by in 2011. Is that correct? And secondly, when will your current maintenance contracts for the mobile network in Norway be replaced with the maintenance contracts with your new vendors? Is that from next year or from end of 2011 when the network is in fact fully in place? And third question relates to Swedish broadband, mobile broadband. You made some price initiatives here earlier in the second quarter, which goes sort of slightly against the current trend in terms of pricing. Are you happy with the return on those investments in terms of subscriber intake and market position you've achieved in Sweden? Thank you.
Yes, you're right in the fact that the rollout, you misunderstood my comment, if that was to be, was interpreted as we would be finished in 2010. Of course, it's just into 2011. As to the date on when these new maintenance contracts, I can't answer that off the top of my head, but of course it will be a gradual shift according to the deployment of the equipment. As for Sweden, yes, we've had quite good success on customer acquisition in Sweden. But also, the unlimited pricing model is not a sustainable one and needs to be changed. So that's why we as a consequence have limited downloads attached to the service offering from mid-summer onwards. And the as we clearly said in an industry perspective, The unlimited download on mobile is not a sustainable business model, and there needs to be staircases or a controlled environment whereby traffic volumes are under control and work in parallel with revenue generation. That's the long-term picture on the pricing models in the mobile world, so to speak.
Okay, thank you.
Next, Nick Delfas, Morgan Stanley. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just want to understand from you when you expect the next dividend from VimpelCom and whether you expect that to be ordinary or to include some measure of re-leverage. Thanks very much.
We don't have a date for that to happen, but we do for certain expect dividends to come. And we will refer that question to the management and the board of VimpelCom Limited.
You don't have a view on whether or not that should be just an ordinary payout ratio or whether it should include some measure of re-leverage?
VimpelCom Limited will find profile on the dividend payment, and that to be treated within the income limited. So I'm afraid I cannot go in detail on that.
Okay, thanks so much.
Time only allows us to have one more caller.
Next, Ulrich Roster, Societe Generale. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. Two questions, maybe. One on the regulatory environment in India. Could you tell us your personal views, your expectations, how the spectrum management issue is going to be finally decided, the way you see this going? There have been these regulatory recommendations, there's a commission being put in place. Where do you see this going and on what time frame? Would be my first question. The second question, coming back to this, to the costs in Norway. I mean, I understand there's some issues that drive them up versus the first quarter of this year and versus the comparable quarter last year. I'm just wondering what we see in Q2 2010. Is that sort of a normal level for the second half of the year, or would you more characterize it as costs having been low in Q1, they may have been a bit high in Q2, and then we see sort of a more normal level in the second half of the year? If you can give us any sort of understanding how the deltas that you've described will play out in the second half, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Hey, Eric, if you can address the last one first, and I give some comments on the regulatory environment in India afterwards.
Yeah, no, I think on a general comment, I think cost management in the Nordics is high on the agenda, but I would say that this quarter we have quite high costs on commissions on handsets, and
that may continue if we continue to sell a lot of handsets, advanced handsets with high commission. I think the network costs are well under control and it's a part of that total program. While on the maintenance side, I think we have had very low cost in the first quarter and have quite high cost in the second quarter. So there you should probably look at it more from a, not cyclical, but some timing differences.
In the regulatory environment in India, we have a strong view that the principles upon which the licenses were awarded back in 2008 should be the prevailing ones. Do you think of NCC retroactive regulatory measures introduced is something that investors, generally speaking, shy away from? So from our perspective, we have the right to have a step up in spectrum from 4.4 to 6.2 according to the license framework without changes in the rollout requirements as indicated in the TRAI proposal. And we expect that when this is ultimately decided upon, that also the government of India will adopt the general principle that retroactive measures are not being adopted. And also on the principles of consolidation as to the limitations that the proposals might have on consolidation initiatives, bringing about a pretty expensive package of frequency costs if consolidation happens is also something that is highly extraordinary compared to other markets. Whereas us being more flexible, of course, when it comes to new spectrum and the refarming principles that has to do with the future, and based upon the level playing principles, as we claim in any market in which we are operating. Thank you.
That concludes the Q&A session. Further questions from the analysts may, of course, be directed to our investor relations department. Thank you all for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.